I was born in Glenn Shipping. I was born in Russell, Manitoba, of Anglo-Saxon parents. And prior to the war, I was in high school, enlisted from high school in the Royal Winnipeg Rifles. And eager to get overseas, so I transferred into a regiment that was going overseas.
You enlisted when the war was declared, or after?
I was in the militia prior to the war. Well, as soon as the war was declared, I was just a boy, but I was in the...
You were already in the militia?
Militia, yes, in 1939. They were born in England. Yes.
And they homesteaded
in England? No, my father came out here before the First World War and went back with the Canadian Army in the First World War. Married my mother in England, come back after the war in 1918. And I suppose the reasons for enlisting was that it was sort of ingrained in our family that we would go to war anyway.
You have military orientation?
Yes.
Oh, yes, sure.
And that, but I left, I was quite young when I left school and enlisted in the Army. And I joined the transferred the Grenadiers to get overseas, and I did. I have some kind of mixed impressions about. Did you want to know about the attitudes of towards the regiment or
anything you want to talk about?
Well, anyway, despite a lot of comment that I've heard since, some of the Grenadiers were trained and some of them weren't, but mainly they, in my opinion, the regular Grenadiers were the ones that needed the training, not the reinforcements, as you hear about. But at any rate, they were a fine bunch of men, and we didn't really get to know each other before we went to action too well, because it was just a boat trip, and you never really got to know each other.
Did you go to Jamaica?
No, I was never in Jamaica, no. I was a reinforcement to the Grenadiers. Well, I wanted to go to England in the worst way, and we heard the draft was going to England. We thought, or at least I thought it was going to England, but we knew we were going to the Orient, and we didn't. We were quite aware of it when we got to the Hawaiian Islands because the Japanese were interned there, and they made a few signs that indicated that they were the people we were going to be fighting. I was on the Awatea going over. And the trip was tiresome, tedious, but hot, poor quarters, poor food, the usual Canadian gripes. Anyway, when we got to Hong Kong, we were put in this with the British troops in the Shanxi boat. And it was a short-lived stay because we were there a matter of a week or so when we were taken over to the hills down to Hong Kong. Now, from here, it's a very mixed up thing. It's
first, I want to say, what type of training had you had when you went over?
Well, personally, I was trained in the militia, which was comparable to regular Army training. And I was in the militia quite young, and I had about 6 months in the active Army before I transferred to Grenadiers.
So you were well trained over
there? Reasonably well, I thought.
And what was your
rest on the Hong Kong? Okay, we're finished. Oh, yes, we were there a short while, as I say, and then we took up battle stations on the island of Hong Kong. And in my personal opinion, there's a lot of indecision. Really, no one knew what was going to happen or how and when, and except that the Japanese were in the mainland. And it came so fast that 1 minute we became involved with these Japanese. And I guess we were highly unorganized. which probably saved off most of our lives, because I think they expected to fight an organized battalion of men, and they didn't, because everybody was everywhere.
Whereabouts were you
when
you leave that?
I was at Wan Chai Gap, Repulse Bay, and then Jardines, Little Wong Ni Chung, all different places back and forth.
And what were you supposed to do then?
I was originally a mortar man, but never got an opportunity. We spiked our mortars at Repulse Bay and went in as infantry. But I had trained as originally as an infantryman. And I was one of the unfortunate ones. I was captured around the 20th at Jardine's Lookout. And taken from there to the mainland, to a place called Aberdeen Camp.
How were you captured?
Oh, very well. We were subject to some pretty grim deals, but as I say, I'm here, so I prefer not to mention them. No, I don't think it matters anyway.
Was it regular Japanese troops or was it
real? Well, Japanese are Japanese, in my opinion. What do you consider a regular Japanese?
Well,
or?
I was informed that there were guerrillas on the island before the Japanese people.
Well, I think that probably they had a number of people employed by the Japanese, including quite a number of Chinese. It was pretty hard for us at that time to tell the difference. But the main Japanese army, of course, came from the mainland and invaded the island. These troops were frontline troops. I suppose they were their best troops. They were, had been fighting in China since about 35, and they were certainly good soldiers. Their, I guess now their methods are more understandable than they were at the time. The discipline they applied to us was almost identical to what they got themselves. By our standards, this would be considered cruel, but anyway, there was a few. There was isolated incidents where they were extremely cruel in their dealing with particularly women, the nurses, nuns in the monastery, and with civilian women and children. But that's war, I suppose. But here we've done the same thing in other areas. No, I think that in some cases I found that where there were, particularly the British Army, of course, being, I guess, they were regular soldiers who were a little better equipped than we were to take this kind of abuse. And I think that they spoke up more for the people than our people spoke up for our men. I have the feeling that, some of our worst enemies were our own men. It's pretty hard to prove anything this day, after all these years. Except the whole thing, in a nutshell, was a sacrifice for British prestige, in my opinion, as I've found out since. And really, what can you say or do at this time? I've had considerable sickness, which I don't know, a lot of times never bothered to report, because I was so disgusted with the reception we got by the medical people and the disbelief. For example, I had pulmonary tuberculosis.
No, I gotta go to another.
I was in the sanatorium, and I was discharged, and suddenly I went out to work, and suddenly I got married, and my pension was increased to 10%, which had remained that for many, many years until just a few years ago, and then this last increased to 50. But I'm not bitter.
No.
I'm a little disgusted, probably as disgusted today as I was then, about the attitude of the governments that we even have today. don't think we have learned many lessons or we have improved very much. And we're as ill prepared in 1972 as we were in 1941 or 39. So we didn't learn too many lessons about how to avoid it the next time. Well, I was wired together for 2 days with some other people and some other grenadiers and different volunteers and British troops. And we marched, I guess, to North Point, and we were taken over there under shell fire on the ferries to the mainland. We went to this Aberdeen. It was a Chinese refugee camp, I believe. And a lot of men died there because there was absolutely nothing. We had no medical people with us, the first group, and men just died because there was no way to attend the wounds. The Japanese just chose to ignore us.
How old were you then?
18.
Were you aware
of what
was happening?
Oh, quite aware.
You were quite aware?
I was prepared to. My father had told me enough. Child at the war was no big nothing. Oh, yes, we had officers, but at this particular place where I was taken, this one camp, there was none of our own officers were there. At the time I was there, there was some British officers.
You weren't but,
just fragments, that's all, I think, serious. Very fortunate. We were moved from there to this monastery where again we were shoved in these rooms of the wounded British. It was run by a Catholic order, and conversations with some of these women telling us the raping that went on during the battle. I guess they had a real rough time. And this was, you expected it. You know, I never got anything that I didn't expect from war. But unfortunately, these people carried it pretty far. I suppose that one of the problems, I guess, when we came back was the fact that we had no direct representative medically that had been in our camp. Or had been in the prison camps, and I guess most of these doctors were experimenting, and it was pretty hard to convey any feeling toward, you know, how you felt to them. They made me and other people jump and hop around and we'd hardly raise our feet and do all kinds of idiotic things, and I still don't think they thought that was real. And even today, I even go to a private doctor who tells me that the only thing you can take is painkiller. You can't work and take painkiller. But the only concern I have, for a personal concern, is that with the way these fellows die off, is that what if you leave them? You leave your wife with nothing. I guess that's happened to a lot of the fellows. You couldn't live with 50% pension. Despite the years that we put in there, it's pretty capsule form. It just was pretty grim. I wouldn't want to go through it again.
Were you put on labor
gangs? Oh, yes. We built many things, tore down many things. And was the Kaitek Airport that we built. We moved a mountain. I had heard people say that faith moves mountains, but it takes more than that. And I suppose it's an international airport today, but they gave us a dollar and a half for doing it.
And you remember that feeling, what kept you going, what did you have a strong will to live?
Well, I had personally made up my mind that I wasn't going to die on that Chinese soil. And combined with a sense of humor, which most of the boys had a fantastic sense of humor. And you had to make light of everything. you couldn't get serious because they published an English paper in Kowloon. That was in the Shamshapokat. And I think there was a lot of chaps that read this and believed it, were convinced that this was the truth, and they gave up hope. But another chap and I used to just keep track of the Rivera kinds of boats they supposedly sunk, shot down, the whole combined. The world never had that many. It's kind of ridiculous. They were ridiculous people anyway.
How did
they do
it?
Well, I have many beatings that I was couldn't beat back, which hurt very much. I think that was one of the hardest things to take, was to be beaten for nothing and not be able to do anything about it. But surprisingly enough, when it was over, I had no vengeance. Somehow, but I didn't. I suppose that they've done the things they've done because they were told the same as we were. And of course the food was not suitable for our people, but it was what they ate. And I suppose they thought they were feeding us the best they could.
Were they sure?
Yes, in the latter part of the war, they had as much variegated as we did. In fact, you could see it in the guards that they had were all swollen up and had similar problems.
Did you get any mail?
I got one part of a letter one time, and I never got any mail home. In fact, I was missing in action. I guess my father didn't know I was living through after the war.
Your family.
No, I was given up as missing. But I wasn't homesick, if that's what you mean.
So then, when you did come back, when they found out about you, it must have been quite a shock
for you. Oh, yeah, well, my mother was dead, and my father, of course. But I had other brothers who were in the services, and they used to try and keep track. And surprisingly enough, they all thought I was living. My brothers were all through Europe. And fortunately, we all come back.
Did you have were you hospitalized at all?
Yes, quite a number of times. I had, I guess I had what probably everyone had, dysentery, malaria, and diphtheria, and a lot.
Were you in a diphtheria epidemic?
Yes. And I get there again, fortune smiled on me. I had it, but I beat it.
You pulled
to it? Yeah. Yes, that was a terrible, it was kind of another hopeless situation because there was nothing available. There was nothing that medical men could do. I'm not being critical, they were restricted too, that they must have felt more hopeless than we did because professional people that could do nothing because they had nothing to do it with.
Did the guards get
the
period to the Japanese?
Not to my knowledge. There was serum available in the colony, and we did eventually get this serum. Now, whether it was held off, who knows? Two or three times there was cholera epidemics in the colony, and we didn't. There was a few, I think, died of cholera, but very, very few. Because, of course, we had been inoculated against this before we went over. But certainly a lot of natives died of it.
Well, there was an inoculation for diphtheria, isn't
there? Well, I don't know whether we got that or whether it was, this was 1942, the diphtheria epidemic. Mm-hmm. And whether the immunization had worn off or not, I wouldn't
know. I don't think they gave it to soldiers.
Maybe not.
They only gave it to babies.
No.
Because you had your DTAPT shots.
Well, of course, at this stage of the game, there was a period where you, for example, the first winter we found much colder than even winter, Canadian winters, because it was so damp, we were continually cold, and you couldn't, the food was inadequate, and all you've done was lay there and shiver and catch senses of sleep. He's running to the bathroom with his rice continually. And I would say at this point was the lowest point, and the men were down, their spirits were the lowest, and physically they were at their lowest. And then they started breaking the camps up and drafting them to Japan and different areas. And as I say, I've had a few fortunate breaks. I was in a couple of work parties where I could steal from the Chinese gardens, and I grabbed everything I could get my hands on. And late in 44, I was fortunate to get on a work party in an orchard. And we didn't get very fat, but we got some of the vitamins that we were lacking and helped us along. But if you were down, if you went down the second time, you usually stayed down. You know, you had to keep going. Of course, men were working sick. For example, I was working in a mine at 116 pounds.
And you're how tall?
6'3". I was never in coal mines. Actually, we called it mining, but all it was were digging under mountains on a mine plan so they could bury their ammunition and bombs to wait for them to save them being bombed. Then we dug air raid shelters for certain Japanese dignitaries. We also worked in oil companies and were exposed to many bombings, machine guns. And we dug pits to put gasoline in, and we sabotaged a considerable amount of it.
How much
did you
get self-satisfaction?
Well, yes and no. Sometimes it was kind of risky.
And what camp were you in Japan?
I was never in Japan. I remained in Shamshapu. I was at Taipo, North Point. I was in the China area all through the world. I'm quite surprised at some of the Japanese camps. I have some photographs that were taken, and I found that in a couple of Japanese camps in Japan, where the men looked to be in extremely good physical condition compared with Shamshapo at the end of the war.
Well, wasn't Shamshapo much hotter climate than Japan?
I suppose on the average it would be, because it was... we didn't have the snow there that they had in Japan. Some of the Japanese camps, I suppose, were real grim, where they were in the mountains and these mines and the snow. We didn't have that, but we had extreme heat.
Extreme heat, tropical environment.
Yeah, and that's right. The dysentery was very bad, and malaria. Got rid of that about 10 years ago. Oh yes, we had good Japanese. You know, they always say that there's got to be some good people. In fact, there were times when we used to trade blankets off and whatnot off for anything we'd get our hands on with the Japanese. They were always interested in getting money or watches or rings or anything. Some of us, when I was taken prisoner, they took everything off us, but you know, you could scrounge around it. And there were, I found the best types were the Formosans that had been conscripted by the Japanese. And a lot of them were familiar with our movies, the movies of the time, and they spoke a smattering of English, but were accustomed to being around white people in the docks, well, not in Formosa. And these people tried. In fact, I would go as far as to say that they stuck their necks out on occasions to give us cigarettes. But the Japanese, like all armies, they had their military police, and they watched everyone, and they were very grim type of people. The Japanese themselves, we had one, for example, you probably, somebody's mentioned his name before today, Sergeant Major Honda, who was a charge of the camp. The sergeant major of the camp was a rather a decent type of Japanese. as they say, they had to act, whoever happened to be around, if the military police were there.
Nobody's attention.
Well, I suppose that in this Taipo Valley, there wasn't very many people involved in it. And the people that were, you know, had a pretty high regard for this man. He was pretty decent. He was more than once would look the other way.
Did you get any red cross?
I got the normal. I think I got 2.5 for the period of years. I helped unload a number of ships. I guess it was for us. But we didn't. This might be a strange thing to say, but in a lot of cases, the Japanese or the Red Cross parcels killed a lot of men. For example, when his first parcel came into camp, a lot of the people had been accustomed, accustomed to eating rice and small diet, weeds and whatnot. And when they got these parcels, they went into the milk and whatnot, and they died overnight with dysentery. So you had to ration yourself very carefully. We used to just put a little tip of a chopstick of milk on their rice, just to get a flavor. But some people just, were starved. They ate the whole thing. But it was better than, unless they'd have had them every week, it was better to have it the way it was. That's right. You couldn't possibly absorb that type of food after eating the rice.
Were there
Americans? There was maybe a half a dozen merchant navy that in the camp I was in. They weren't regular American forces.
And how were you there? How many were in that camp?
Well, I suppose at one time early, of course, the whole regiment at one time, the two regiments were contained in a place called North Point originally. And then they took us all to Sham Shapo. There would probably be in excess of 3,000 men. This is all Portuguese volunteers, the Indian troops, and first winter, I think quite a number of them died. They couldn't take the cold at all. And it kept being, they drafted men, and I just don't know what was the end result there, how many men.
You stayed in that camp, or were you sent to smaller camps on the island?
Well, I stayed most of the war through in Sham Shapo.
When you went from work party from Sham
Shapo. That's right. I went by truck.
Did you, your liberation, was that earlier than the other year? How did you find out? Do you remember the date?
Well, we were liberated by the crew of the Robert, I might say, by the Canadian Navy. And we actually worked a day after the war was over, but we knew that it was over because the Japanese the Chinese were trying to convey the message to us, and the Japanese weren't beating them up, invading them, or kicking their pregnant women as one of their favorite practices, and we knew that something must be up, so that night they just left the camp. And the Americans flew over and dropped pamphlets to say that we were still under Japanese military law to stay in the area of the camp. And then the crew of the Robert came in. I suppose when you talk about this thing to many people, I think that it must be hard to understand. For example, I would say that it might surprise you that there was not too much elation when this thing was over. You have to understand that after four years, you have it becomes a way of life. This is hard to explain, but it becomes a way of life, and we had seen the Japanese, and we knew what they were capable of, and I guess we had set our minds that it wasn't going to be a short war, because we had been through the American, been through the Philippines and the Hawaiians, And what they had at that time certainly didn't compare with what the Japanese were using. And your common sense told you it wasn't going to be just a short war. At least I never thought it would be. But to say that we were highly elated would be an exaggeration, because it was just, that was it, it was over, and it was time.
So you didn't leave the camp the first day
after? Shortly after. I wasn't long getting out of there.
Where did they run you after?
Well, from the point where they would escort us from the camp to the docks, to the Kowloon Ferry, which is around 7 or 8 miles from Shamshapo. And the Japanese had a curfew on, of course, and you had to be off the street at a certain hour. And if you weren't, well, you lay in the road until curfew came on again in the morning or off. So they tried as much as possible to get as many men on the Robert and feed them decently as possible. They took them down in different groups. We're Canadians. We broke the ropes and we just wandered through the colony on our own. And this was utter chaos. In fact, I ended up being a member of a patrol to go out and bring some of our guys back so they could come home.
The guys were just so happy to love.
Well, I suppose that they reverted to type, more or less, the booze and what goes on. They'd become perfectly normal again, let's put it that way.
So,
well, we were there, I'd say, we stayed in this camp, prison camp, and of course by this time the Japanese the following day had brought truckloads of sake and you name it into camp, and all kinds of goodies. Whatever they could get hold of out of the go-downs. And we were put on a different diet.
Why did the Japs bring them to make an end?
Well, I suppose that for quite a length of time there that the people, the Japanese, were quite aware that they were going to lose the war. Although they... being the fanatical type of people they are, they held out to the bitter end, but I suppose that they had lost, and they had something to gain by giving us a little bit of... I have found that our people are quite easily impressed by any gesture from foreign countries, and they still are today, so they're a very childish nature, our people. So the enemy had anticipated this to the end. No, I went from, I left Hong Kong on the old Empress of Britain. The main body of men left on that ship, and there was also a hospital ship there that took the real sick people. And we went to Manila, and we went to a rest camp just out of Manila, the city of Manila. Very beautiful spot, and we were certainly grandly treated by the Americans. I was there for almost 3 weeks, I suppose, or a month. Then I volunteered to fly out, but I didn't fly. I got down on the docks and got on another boat with the Admiral Rodman. Came back to San Francisco. But we certainly were treated with the greatest of respect by the Americans, which is more than I can say about the Canadians when I got here. I went up to Victoria. Yes, I was in Victoria for some time under quarantine. Well, it was a very short quarantine, actually. And then I went straight to Winnipeg.
Did you go to Winnipeg?
That's the story.
Okay,
that's
not, tell me, what were your problems in jumping down? Like, did you find it very hard to bring it up to ties? Did you find that a problem?
I don't think this is an exclusive problem as far as the Grenadier is concerned. I think you'll find that shortly after the war, it was there was a mass meeting between all soldiers, all services. For example, you'd go to the Mall Hotel and you'd sit and drink and you'd meet this guy you went to school with and you'd meet someone. Right? And it was trying to... I guess you were trying to make up for lost time, sort of thing. But I don't think it affected us anymore. I've heard that it did, but I don't really believe that because I have brothers. And I may have, in my family, been a little more rambunctious. My brother, for example, they didn't drink, and I did. So they settled down much sooner than I did. But I don't think it was, you could apply this particularly to the Grenadiers. I found that, until the reestablishment credits ran out, the troops were hooping it up, and then they all had to settle down and go to work.
Did you find it hard to get back?
I found it personally difficult for the simple reason that I had been in a sanatorium, and I had to take. I had only been a scholar. I had no experience, no trade, and I just couldn't get a job. My help. The only jobs that I could get were jobs of a physical nature, and I didn't have the strength. But anyway, I took one, and I guess it was the best thing I ever done. And then I left there and went into business, and I worked my way up to become a manager. And I quit that, but not because of any particular unrest, mentally or physically, at that time. I still find myself comparing our way of life with the type of life we led. Sometimes I stop and I think, we weren't too badly off under those Japanese. For example, you take certain individuals you have to deal with, and But it's all over.
You were experienced there now. That was an awful experience. But do you regret it, or do you think that it made a better man?
Unfortunately, there's not really many things you learned while in a prison camp that you could possibly apply to normal people. For example, some of the, there's no use telling any of the stories, really, because they're just so unrealistic. Everything was unreal in a sense. You know, the way that people, the value in life over there, for example, it just nobody seemed to care. But by the same token here, I think they care about as much, really.
So, in many ways, what I think what bothers you more than anything else is the fact that people haven't learned at all
from that. We're going through an age now, and I have grown up children, where for some reason or other, any opportunity to avoid reality is taken. Nobody likes to have to do 8 hours work if they can do five, or don't want to work for a dollar if they can get 10 for doing nothing. It's just an age we live in. But this is partly our fault, for somebody had to start it. I think that our governments were quite aware of what we were going into. I'm positive of this. But rallying around the old flag, somebody had to be the goat. We were as good as any. We were originally a garrison regiment, which doesn't always make too many honors in the battlefield. And I think that
if they had air power, it would have been a different story.
There was no way we were prepared to beat the Japanese at that time. No way. There was nothing. There was nothing to beat them with. To say that we were ill prepared, I mean, I quite often hear the story that we didn't have guns and shells, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. It wouldn't have mattered if we'd have had 10,000 more men on the island with 10 guns apiece, we wouldn't have eaten them. It was just an impossibility because of the terrain and there was no navy. The British had no navy there to supply you. And the Japanese, as you know, had struck simultaneously all through the Pacific, so there was nowhere to go if you had a boat. It was just an immediate thing. The whole Pacific was tied up by the Japanese. And the white man's chance of escaping, of course, was quite slim because there's no way I could walk through a Chinese village and get mistaken for a Chinaman. The language was a barrier. Not really, no. I had opportunities. The people go down to Mexico, people go over here and go there, and in my opinion, it indicates one thing, you know, that there's no longer anyone around they can impress, or they can go to a poorer country and maybe make an impression, but it's not really... My idea of a holiday, one of these to go back there. I have a camp in the bush, and I'm quite happy with it. I would sooner get away from humanity than go back to it.
When you came back, you were in the center. What was that?
Pulmonary tuberculosis.
How long?
Which has been denied since, but I have papers to say that this is what I have.
How many years ago?
Well, I'll tell you, I was in the sanatorium for a short time. At the time, I thought quite robust. I was thrown out of the sanatorium along with a few other. I was never in the. I was in a place called Gordon Cottage, which was an observation. So I was never active TB. So I was misbehaving, and some of us were thrown out. And I was taking pneumothorax at the time, and I went to a doctor and got a needle put through my lungs, and I just continued that on my own. I'm glad I did. Some of the fellows that stayed there are not here today.
Don't you feel that you had a good healthy upbringing in the first place?
Very good. I come from a very good family. My family, the main thing was the table. My father and mother weren't accustomed to luxuries and never desired them. They were interested in bringing up the family. And I tried to do the same thing, but I have been fairly successful.
Well, you've adjusted very well.
As I say, if I can go on for hours on the amusing things that happened, which I like to talk about occasionally with certain people, because there was some very amusing things happening.
Would you like to relate to them?
Not particularly. I think these would be hard to understand. Maybe you think I was of a childish nature.
No, because they always,
when things got the grimace, of course, there was a little bit of humor came in, and this was provided, I'd say mainly by the Japanese themselves. I'll have to be careful because this image we've got of Japan now, I may distort it. Well, this is the kind of a hard thing to get into, really, if I was with somebody else that I'd been with. But to tell these humorous things, and there were many. Like the first troops had never seen a glass eye. Some of our fellows had glass eyes that were given to them over there in Bowen Road, and they were mismatched. They just give them anything they could get to stick in there, you know. And these guys would quite often go through a number of antics, throwing them in the ground and jumping on, putting them back in the head, you know. Uh, we taught them, these different minds, we taught them how to play poker, and this was had a psychological advantage to us. They would forget all about us, and we just sit stand there while they yelled and fought in this poker game. Many things that we were... we done a lot of things that made it easy for us, I can assure you. The only thing, you couldn't get enough to eat.
That's right. Food. That's all they do.
And I suppose that some people quite often ask, well, this working part in human making you work. But then again, I suppose if we hadn't worked, we would never, none of us would have come back. Periodically, you'd be in a camp, you maybe have dysentery, or you could hardly wait until you'd get strong enough to get out and run these working parties, because you've seen people. You've seen the Chinese people as they lived, and you've seen the scenery, and it's a beautiful country. And I think we would have really gone crazy if we had been confined entirely to camp. For example, I have friends who were confined almost entirely to that prison camp through continuous sickness. And they do not think the same as I do, or there are a number of people that I know. Out on these working parties. And it'd give you something to gripe about.
And
oh, yes, there were times, there were some grim work parties, for example, where we were on a couple of the oil companies and they were trying to bomb them, or not trying, they did it successfully, and we were exposed to quite a bit in a few areas. There again, we were lucky. But a lot of the fellas, I've also heard this remark, that the whole lot of you are crazy. I've heard this quite often. You'll have to ask my wife about this. She doesn't think I am, but anyway. I personally find this to be true. I find today, even that I meet certain individuals that I know they're not with us. And an example is a lot of our boys are... A lot of our boys have definitely suffered mentally. There's, it's done something to them. If you get with some of them when they're drinking, they're just... for example, I joined the organization for the first time last year. I've never been to a meeting, but I gave the guy the money at a funeral one time. I said, oh, you put me down, but I would never go to it. Because I found talking to these people, for example, I went to a Hong Kong reunion one time, and people that I considered reasonably intelligent were telling me about their trip to Japan and who they met, the gardener and the ex-camp commandant, like the guy was somebody from a local mission, And I also have heard certain senior men in our regiment on television say that they weren't badly treated. And I know these people, of course, but I can assure you they must have been brainwashed by somebody, because you don't forget the kind of treatment we got. No way.
The Oriental thinking is different than the white
person. I can assure you that the Orientals go to bed and do the same things as you do. They eat the same goddamn things, and they have the same feelings towards pain, and they laugh and they cry. And where this inscrutable Orient comes from, I don't really know. Well, they have I would say that their code of ethics has applied, amongst themselves. Of course, it doesn't coincide with ours. I would say that they are pretty solid people. For example, we don't throw our whole people out, but we might as well, but the Japanese and Chinese don't, even today. So if you want to call them a subculture, you have to be careful, because they're... I think probably that the Chinese we have a hell of a lot to learn from both of them, we probably are. The discipline, of course, again, I've seen many cases where the applied discipline to the people was grim, but this is, they apply the same thing to us, but then again, you could see them treating their own people this way. For example, if you were caught going AWL or something, the punishment was a beating. And they'd beat them up for an inch of their life and put them on guard duty. And they would beat us up. But it wasn't really unfair because this was a form of discipline they had. Hard to understand at the time, you know. It took some time to really understand just what made these people tick. Now, another thing, they're ruled by mass hysteria more so. They're not quite as individual as we are. Well, the average Japanese goes by this or by that, but, you know, we start thinking for ourselves. And I hope we always can.
How about Chinese?
Yes, I think that the Chinese forgot more about cruelty than the Japanese will ever know. And I think maybe we better keep on the right side of them. The Orient, of course, is in that respect, is that human life, of course, is of very low value because of the multitudes of people. But then again, the people that are in it's the same here. They have no desire to encourage a lot of certain peoples, like, for example, let's say the coolie class or the sampan people. Why should they worry about them? Well, they come and go on their boats. Certain people get rich and get richer. I think this was indicated quite clearly on television just recently. In fact, it rather surprised me that the splendor and the palatial surroundings that these communists have in Peking compared to what our media has given us to believe, that this country is, and I have seen this country, and I can assure you there's a lot of poverty in it and a lot of sickness and disease. But I think maybe that things have certainly improved in China. And the Chinese leaders, of course, have just become like our leaders here, all the Taipans now. But I was quite amazed at change.